We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Saturday to you. So glad and honored you are listening to us here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome to the Home of Freedom Show. If you are new to the show, this is where we actually get a chance to talk to now and 1 o'clock. Relating to any repairs you may be doing at the fishing camp, or maybe you're preparing for your hunting camp, or your home, your apartment, your condo, your office building, all the things that you may be doing, projects yourself, or projects you want to hire a professional to do, and you like to use me as a sounding board on what products to use, or maybe what steps should be done first, or maybe what options you even possibly have to address some of those improvements. It could be things that are related to carpentry, or painting, or staining, flooring, plumbing, electrical repairs. And this also is the time of year where we get lots and lots of phone calls related to high utility bills or moisture issues that you're seeing in your house. Or maybe it's comfort. Hey, man, I'm paying this high bill to utility company and I'm still uncomfortable. You know, what can I do? Or maybe it's dust. You know, maybe you got some indoor air quality concerns. You know, perhaps your allergies are going crazy and you're wondering why. You got dust in your house, or you have high humidity and you say, man, I'm just tired of dealing with high humidity. I got to lower my temperature, my thermostat lower than I really want it to go just to remove the moisture and be comfortable in my office or in my home. Well, if any of those questions sparked a thought, give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. That number is 504-260-1870, 504-260-1870. If you can't call me, but you'd like to text me, that text number is 870-870. I would love to either talk to you or see your text and answer those questions live here on the show between now and 1 o'clock. We do have lots of time left of the show. We're just getting things cranked off. But as I always do, encourage you, call in early, text in early. You have a great likelihood of getting your questions answered if you text in or if you call in now. And once you're on hold, you can turn your volume down on your radio, and I promise you're not going to miss anything. You can hear everything live from what's happening at the show on your phone. I assure you you're not going to miss anything. And once you get into the queue, don't hang up. Yeah, I hear folks get in the queue, and they wait 2-3 minutes, and they hang up. Well, I'm first come, first serve, so I'm going to get to everybody who calls in, and that's why I always encourage you, call in now. It's probably the best advice I can give you, other than answering your questions here on the Home Improvement Show. All right, listen, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we'll start answering some of your questions and talking home improvement and getting things kicked off. Madeline, I see you on hold. We'll be right back next to you. Don't go anywhere. Hey, welcome back to the Home Improvement Show here on the Big 870. If you have a question, now's a great time to give us a call. The number is 504-260-1870, or shoot me a text at 870-87. Let's get to our first call and speak with Madeline. Hey, Madeline, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
I have
a question I have in the bedroom. There's a mildew smell in one corner of the bedroom. And I'm thinking, because it's on the outside of the wall where they installed the meter pipe, and the gap around that meter pipe is larger than the pipe. So I don't know. I was wondering if that was causing the mildew smell to inside the house, which is kind of annoying. And what did I need to do to correct that?
Yeah, so a lot of times when you have a smell like that, that mildew, that musty, earthy smell, that's related to moisture. So it could be that water is getting into that wall, but that that corner, but the outside wall, like you described, and it could be getting into around that hole. If the hole is much larger than the pipe and it's not watertight or air sealed, it's certainly possible. What type of veneer do you have on the outside? Is it brick? Is it siding? Is it wood?
Brick.
What do you have?
It's brick.
It's brick.
It's brick.
Okay. Okay. When you look at the bottom course or two courses of brick at the very bottom of the wall, are they dark in color or green or kind of, you know, hazy? Are they a different shade or color than the upper brick or brick above it?
Oh, I did notice if the brick was like that, but I did notice there's greenish stuff around the pipe. before it even gets, you know, when it gets towards the brick.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to identify for you. Yeah, so that greeny stuff, it's because that brick is wet. It's holding moisture. I also suspect that, you know, obviously that moisture is going into that wall, because what's behind that brick, depending on the age of your home, there's some type of wall sheathing. But, you know, again, depending on how old your house is, either would be plywood or OSB or foam board, or it could be that old-fashioned bagasse board made from the sugar cane, and that absorbs water very well. And it could be coming to that space and just getting moist. So the first thing I think I would like you to do is I would go buy, or if you don't already have one, borrow a dehumidifier and put it inside that bedroom. I would close that bedroom door, and I would locate the dehumidifier near that outside corner. And I'll also get an isolating fan in that space, or if you have a ceiling fan, start circulating some of the air in that space. And you're going to have to empty that dehumidifier probably two, maybe three times a day. And it's going to be a few weeks because it's a slow process to dry that out. And then as it's drying, you can go on the outside of the wall, and you can get that brick clean, because you're going to have to get it clean and dry before you treat it and protect it. And I would caulk between that pipe and that hole, and I would use a product. It's a polyurethane caulk, a polyurethane sealant. It comes in a caulk tube, and a good brand name would be like NP1. It is something that's commonly available that you can caulk it and seal it. And then I think you can go as far as even painting a product on the outside of the brick. You can either roll it or hand brush it or spray it. It's a product called frog skin. And what the frog skin does is it makes the rainwater not go into the brick and the mortar, because your brick and mortar are porous too. Just because you have the hole there is one thing, but also water can go through the brick and through the mortar between the brick and try to prevent that from happening. The great thing about the frog skin, is it doesn't change the color of the brick. It doesn't change the sheen. In fact, you don't even know it's there, but you need to start with a good, clean, dry surface before you apply it. And you also need to make sure you don't do it on a windy day, because it will stain glass. And anything glass or a mirror like that, it's going to stain it. So you want to protect that if there's any windows, you know, closely located to that space.
Okay, so the fan will dry everything from the inside out?
Yes, that dehumidifier will dry from the inside. That's correct.
Okay. And how long do I need to run this fan now, you say it?
At least 2 or 3 weeks, until you're not seeing lots of water. When you first turn on, you can see lots and lots of water, and it'll take 2 or 3 weeks for it to dry at least. You can also, if you have someone with a moisture meter, they can come measure the moisture of the sheetrock and of the wood that's behind it too, and that would be a good indication of how fast you're drying and how you know, uniform you're drying as well. So the target moisture content would be 15% moisture content or less for that exterior wall when you're measuring with the meter.
Okay. So that would be the dehumidifier, that much moisture. That's what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. I needed that information. So, is there anybody in particular I can get to check this out?
In reference to what, Ms. Madeline? Check it out for what?
Checking out the moisture and everything. Is there? I just do it myself.
For such a small project, it may be challenging to get somebody to come in there to do that. I would suggest you, moisture meters aren't that expensive. You can probably go online like Amazon and get one fairly reasonable. It has some pins, or you can poke the pins into the sheetrock and measure it. Or hopefully you can find someone in your family who has one, or a neighbor you can borrow one. If push comes to shove and you can't get that done, call me in my office and I'll try and help you another way.
All right. Okay, great. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the help.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome. Thank you for calling. Hope you get that resolved. Good luck with that. All right. Let's go to our next call and speak with Guy. Hey, Guy. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Just let me get the speakerphone off. Yep. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have, I think, some kind of problem with my AC system. It is, I have high humidity, and I'm seeing mold at the registers and in the ducts. And like just a few days ago, I stuck my head up there, and the actual ducts were sweating. The AC box was sweating, and there was some water in the pan.
Okay. So you have a few things that are causing that. Let's talk about what happens with condensation first, because I want you to understand the basis first, and then I'll talk about some of the causation.
Okay.
So in order for condensation to occur, you can have moisture in the air, which in the Gulf South we got oodles of moisture, particularly this time of year, and that could be moisture in your house, outside, and also in your attic. And then also you need a cool surface. And this time of year, our air conditioning is like running almost around the clock in daytime and nighttime conditions. So your ductwork is wet because it's in a moist attic. Those metal PI boxes are wet because they're cool and it's in a moist attic. And your registers inside your house, those grills are moist or condensing because of a number of different causes. And let me discuss them. A lot of times when I do, when I go to a person's house or their building to investigate and identify causation and also provide solutions on how to solve these problems, it's related to duct leaks, both supply duct leaks and return duct leaks. But if you got lots of water and you got the mold like you described, you know, this has been an ongoing thing more than likely, and you probably have a lot of return air leaks. At least that's been my experience. So if you have a relationship with someone who maintains your air conditioning equipment or who installed it, either way, I would contact them, have them come look at it, and measure the amount of duct leak that you have. And once they've measured
the duct leak, I mean, the system was put in after Katrina. And since 2012, it's been under the care of one particular AC company, and I was a little bit surprised when I started listening to the show because it is Burkhardt.
Okay.
And I stuck my head up, and I know I have some leaks, and the box joints are just sealed with like silvery tape. I don't know. I mean, it's I think I do have a wet attic to start with, because
I
think sometime after Katrina, I had a power vent fan, and I think somebody cut the power to it. So that's problem one, and that I probably need to solve. But other than that, if I stick my hand out, I can find cool air streams.
Yeah, so you need to get Burkhardt back and then either address the duct leaks, but you also need to address what's happening in your attic, because that's a large contributing factor. If your attic is saturated, no matter if you have no duct leaks and the best insulation of those ducts, they still go to sweat. So you want to address that moisture as much as possible. The other contributing factor is the temperature you have your thermostat set on. This time of year, outside summertime dew point temperatures are 74, 75 degrees on average, which means any cool surface that's below 74, 75 degrees that's exposed to moisture, it could condense and sweat or even start forming droplets of water. So, if you got your house in 68 degrees, there is nothing you can do to prevent those cool surfaces that are exposed to the elements other than conditioned space, where it's not going to sweat.
Driving it pretty hard, so I can lighten up a little bit on that for sure.
Yeah, that would help too. That would definitely help as well.
Those are
typical causes.
Yeah, I also, the house increased in size after Katrina. We raised it, and the old garage area became a master bedroom suite. And so a 5-ton was put in rather than the previous 4-ton. And I don't know that there's been any upgrade to the intake volume. Is that a factor?
Yes, sir. So if the return air intake, I'm presuming it was the right size for the 4-ton. If you switch to a 5-ton, then you need to increase that. We'll add another return air intake for the 5-ton. But if it was oversized, if the 4-ton was really oversized and you put a 5-ton in it, then it could be the appropriate size. So it's hard question to answer, but
yeah, without seeing it. Well, I can tell you right now, it's got a 20x20 and a 12x12 intake. What kind of intake area should you have for a 5-ton unit?
So for a 5-ton system, you need to have more closely to something that is like a 24 by 30 and mm-hmm. a 12 by 12. That will put you mm-hmm. closer to what you need to be. So you are slightly undersized with that 20 by 20 and that secondary okay. unit. So you got to get that addressed.
And to top that off, when I took the one out, for the first time I noticed some kind of box structure has been built inside there. So part of that 20 by 20 is blocked off. And I don't know what that structure is or when it was put in. So
yeah, typically that's done for sound attenuation purposes. So that may be trying to block out some of the sound from the fan motor so it won't be as noisy. And I'm speculating just from past experience what I normally see. Finally, I have one more thing for you guys to start thinking about is differential pressures. Negative pressures is another causation of wet duct work and wet registers. So if you're closing bedroom doors a lot for extended periods of time, or if you get, you know, other issues like kitchen hoods or clothes dryers that may be causing a differential pressure in the house, that could also contribute to it. Hey, man, I got to go. We'll get to see this news break coming back, but give those folks a call, and I'm sure they'll be happy to handle it. We'll be right back with the Home Improvement Show right after this brief break. Barry. Hey, Barry, thanks for holding on. Good morning.
Morning, Paul. Redoing a shower. I have a old brick house built in the 1959. It has a brick exterior, has the blackboard, 2x4s. And inside the bathroom, there was existing ceramic tile. What was between the 2x4s and the tile was a center match, 1x6 center match. And they had 3/8 gypsum board. Well, my question is, they didn't have any insulation. And this bathroom is on an outside wall, so I ripped a lot of that out, and I insulated it. My question is, before I go up with my cement board, should I put some tar paper in between, or would that cause a problem?
What did you insulate it with, Barry, like a fiberglass bat, or what did you use?
Yeah, that fiberglass, it's like wrapped up in fiberglass. That way I could just slip it down between the studs.
Okay. So did you do any air sealing of those stud cavities in the top plate and bottom plate before you insulate it?
Where at?
Like wherever there was a crack or a hole or a gap, did you put some caulking or sealant or polyurethane sealant in it? Anything? Any foam in the can?
Between what? I mean,
Before you insulate it. Did you do any caulking, any air sealing before you put insulation in those walls?
No. They have the backboard is in between the studs and the brick. I don't know where you would want to seal it at.
If were there any holes, any cracks, any areas that would let? Okay, that's what I'm trying to get to. If there were holes there, then obviously you would want to air seal those first.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason I asked that question, Barry, is because air leaks allow a lot more moisture in coming into our home than anything else. So at any time there's an opportunity to solve some air leaks, you sure want to take advantage of that. And also because your bathroom produces lots of moisture by bathing, it's even more important. So to answer your question, is it necessary or would you like to put felt paper on the face of the studs before you install your cement board? I don't see any reason why you would want that or need that.
Okay.
I would, if it was my house, I wouldn't do it. However, I want to be real careful to describe to you the need, the great importance to waterproof the outside face of that cement board before you do any ceramic tile or marble or whatever stone you're putting up there. I like the Schluter type systems. You can go online and research those Schluter systems and install that exactly to the manufacturer's directions. Because where most people fail is either going to be the shower pan and or the second thing they fail on the most is not waterproofing those walls with the right product or even following the directions.
So, you know, no reason to do this again twice. It's cheap and easy to install those products now, as opposed to doing everything and have to channel part and redoing it and install them the second time.
Right. I had done a little research on a Sluder system, and I kind of am going in a different direction. Got half of my shower pan already poured. I'm going to go with a liner and then, grout on top of that and then get my floor in, cement board up and all of that. But my original question was just whether I needed a vapor barrier on that outside wall inside the shot wall. I guess it's not going to affect the cement board at all, correct?
And it's not, but you don't want a vapor barrier at that location. If you were to put a vapor barrier in the extra wall, you want it on the outside behind the brick. And I'm hoping that blackboard is serving as a vapor barrier for you.
Yeah, it all seemed to be in good shape. I mean, I guess it was just as black as today as it was when they put it in.
Okay.
Also, I'd like to get your number. I have another question that goes a little further in depth, and I don't want to take up all the radio time.
Sure. Yeah, you can either email me your question at paul@lagrangeconsulting.com, or you can call the office, which, to be quite frank, I'm very rarely there because I'm normally out in the field. But you can leave a message if I'm not there. That number is area code 985-845-2148, 845-2148.
All righty. Got it. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. You bet. Thank you for the phone call. Good luck with that project. Sounds like a fun project. All right. Listen, we're going to go to commercial break. Andrew, you're up next. Don't go anywhere. Robert, I see you're on hold. Keep on holding. We're coming back to you right after this. Hey, welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. I'm so glad and honored you're tuning in. Let's go back to the phone lines and we're going to speak with Andrew. Hey, Andrew, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I had a question about a hot water heater. Last night came home around midnight and I had a drip coming from the bottom of my hot water heater and it was going under the wall underneath my refrigerator in the kitchen. So hot water heater is probably, I've been here for like 14 years. It's at least 14 years old. So I kind of was looking to see, I'm sure I'm going to need a new one. What is the advantages of a tankless water heater versus the big unit that I have in my utility?
Well, the biggest advantage of a tankless water heater, first of all, let me ask Andrew, is it gas or electric?
It's gas.
It's gas. Okay, good. Because the comments I'm going to give you are related to a gas tankless water heater. It would give the biggest advantages of going with tankless gas is that it will give you endless amounts of hot water. As long as you have that water valve open on the hot side, it's going to produce hot water. So if you've got a large garden tub or you like to take long showers or you like to have your schedules as such where multiple people or using hot water at the same time, meaning washing clothes and washing dishes and taking a shower all at the same time, a gas tankless water heater, presuming it's sized properly for the usage, for the way it's used, will just heat and heat and heat and heat the water. The other advantage of gas tankless water heaters is that it takes a smaller footprint as opposed to the tank. So it's smaller in size. Now, when you're converting over from a gas tank to a tankless, there's a few things you need to be aware of. Now, first of all, you're going to buy the tankless water heater, and it's a little more money than the tank. So that's the first hurdle you need to overcome. The second thing you need to look at, and you certainly want to get a licensed plumber to look at this first before you invest your money in it, is to see if your gas plumbing line, the line that the plumbing pipe is providing gas to your current water heater, is large enough to handle the tankless water heater, because they consume more fuel in shorter periods of time and require a larger size pipe. And the third thing would be the flue pipe, that round pipe that comes off the top of your tank water heater. It goes through the roof. Typically, right, those are galvanized right now. Depending on what technology you get, it's either going to be plastic with the tankless or it's going to be stainless steel. So if it's stainless steel, that means it's going to be expensive to buy. The plastic, not so much. If it's inside your house, then you want to get the one with the plastic pipe because that technology uses what's called sealed combustion or direct vent combustion water heaters, and it's not going to be combusted air from your home in order to properly heat the water. Presuming you have the right size gas pipe to use to go to tankless.
Gotcha. So I believe I'm trying to read the tank. I think this is, it says 69 gallon tank.
Okay.
So like what roughly a cost of like a tankless if I was able to get it?
Well, it depends on the infrastructure. If you need the stainless steel blue pipe, if you need the upsized gas line, there's a lot to that. So there's a lot of variables that go along with that. Just the water heater alone, just to go with the gas tank's water heater alone, it's going to flow. And, of course, it depends on what size you need. And you need to determine how much hot water you want to use at any one given time. How many gallons of hot water you want to use at any one given time. So if you're looking to wash clothes and take a shower at the same time, you need to know how much hot water your washing machine is using and how much hot water your bathtub or your shower valve is using. Add those two up, and that determines how many gallons per minute you need to heat. But on a low end, you're $1,100-$1,200 for a larger mid-size gas tankless water heater on low end, and it goes up from there. Let me tell you one other feature I think you need to consider, Andrew, and that's a modulating valve. The purpose of a modulating valve on a gas tankless water heater is to turn the gas water heater on, the tankless water heater on, when you're using low volumes of water. Like, for instance, when you're brushing your teeth or shaving, you may be using a trickle of water through your bathroom vanity, and it may not be enough water running through that water heater to make it ignite. But with a modulating valve, it actually makes it turn on with low volumes of water. It turns on and off, depending on the demand for low volume. So to me, if I was going to go with a gas tankless water heater in my home, I wouldn't hesitate to research and find one that had that modulating valve or some technology to make it operate properly with low water use. Because when you're shaving when you're shaving or brushing teeth, you're not using lots of water, but you still need hot water when you need it.
Gotcha. Now, do you have anybody you recommend who would know all this information and you trust that would be able to give me a good installation if I went with that, or a good determination if I would be able to get that in my house?
Sure, absolutely. If you go to paulshouse.com, to the website, paulshouse.com, and you search your region, you search for plumbers, you'll see the plumbers that I recommend that will be able to tell it.
Gotcha. All right, Paul, you have a good weekend.
Yes, sir. You do the same. Appreciate the phone call. Good luck with that project, man. And look, you didn't ask me, but let me say real quick about drying the water that drips. And the most important thing you can do right now is add dehumidification, get some fan movers, may even put some supplemental electric heat in that space and dry as quickly as possible. And this is a slow, long process. But you need to act quick. That's when I say quick as possible. Start acting now. Start drying now. We'll slowly dry this, and it'll take some time. If you've been dripping water, 4, 5, 6 hours, you got a lot of water needs to be removed. So hopefully you get that done in a timely manner. All right, Andrew, good luck with that project. Appreciate the phone call. All right, folks, listen, we're going to go to a commercial break, but we'll come back. We'll answer some more of your questions. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Robert, you're up next. We only got a minute, so I'm hoping to get your question in. Good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. I have a friend of mine. I'll make it real quick. I have a friend that has a house that's about 3,000 square feet. He has a ridge vent on the top of the roof. The roof's about an 8 or 9, 12. He's got some vents on the side on the soffit. He's got a little ventilation in there. No power ventilators, no whirlybirds. He has a brand-new air conditioner that has been installed. And what he's getting is he's getting a lot of condensation from his air conditioner, from the condensate line. Not only from the condensate line where it comes out of the evaporator, but also the suction line that runs to the evaporator. It's actually the water is sweating through these lines. He's got a few can lights in the house, but the attic is decked for the most part. He has real high, a real high attic. The pitch is real high. You recommend power ventilators or do you recommend Whirlybirds?
Robert, I normally don't recommend power ventilators because they cause more problems than they solve. I like the passive attic ventilation, but it almost sounds like there's something else happening besides attic ventilation in this room. I want you to hold on. Let's talk about more of this when we come back after the news hour, because there's a lot to it. So just hold on. We'll get right back to you after this break. Well, good morning. Welcome to the second hour of the Home Improvement Show. You heard the numbers. You have a question. That number is 504-260-1870, or you can send me a text at 87870. Right at the end of the previous hour, we were talking with Robert, and Robert was calling in for a friend who had a new air conditioning system installed in his house and was having some excessive moisture that's occurring in the attic space on the line set, the copper line that connects the inside and the outside units, the evaporated drain, and also the ductwork. Robert, one thing that you and I touched on right before the end of the first hour is the need to make sure that the attic itself is not contributing to these moisture problems. If the air inside that attic is that saturated, where things are that wet, it's going to be very challenging to overcome that. There are some other contributing factors, and this is why I asked you to hold on, that I want to discuss with you that could be causing the symptoms that you're describing. So some of it is that if your friend purchased a very high energy efficient system, air conditioning system,
meaning a system. 16 SEER unit. We did notice one thing. We put a fan in the attic on before he had the unit change, it was giving us the same symptoms. When he had the unit change, before he had it changed, we put a fan in the attic and let it blow on the unit, and it stopped some of that sweating. It reduced it to almost to nothing. Now I'm going to tell you, I know just from being around this, the unit is it's a 5-ton unit. It's a 16 SEER, has a TXV valve. But the house is 3,000 square feet. I'm thinking automatically that this unit is undersized. It only has one unit in the whole house for 3,000 square foot of living. Would that unit be too small? And the second thing is, when we put the fan, it did stop some of the moisture, the condensation. It actually reduced it. So that's why we were wondering, is there an airflow problem in the attic?
Well, it certainly could be. But here's the thing about attic ventilation. Here in the South, we can't dry our attics with ventilation. We can only remove heat. But there's a balance that you need to follow very, very carefully. Meaning, if you're under ventilated and you're high and pressurized, it could be just as bad as having an attic that's overventilated that's full of moisture. So there's that balance you have to find between the two ends of the spectrum that I'm describing to you. Because if you overventilate it, your moisture problem could seriously get a lot worse than it currently is, because you're adding more moisture to the attic space. So you need to look at that, how the ventilation is done, or how to address the moisture within the attic is removed in order to slow down or prevent this evaporation. What the fan was doing, when you put the fan in the attic and it was, being applied against the machine and the ductwork, it was evaporating the moisture off of it. It's air moving. That's not a bad approach to get you a short-term solution, at least to prevent that water from damaging the insulation and the rest of the unit and the ceiling below. So you can certainly do that. To get to your question, is a 5-ton unit the right size for a 3,000-square-foot house? It just depends. It depends on the type of windows, the type of insulation, the cubic volume of the house. I can tell you that I have a 2,178-square-foot house, my personal home. So right at, call it for simple math, 2,200, and it's operating on a 3-ton system. So it just depends on the energy efficiency features of the home. And what I was going to, you said it was a 16 SEER. If it's a 16 SEER where the indoor equipment has the ability to variable speed indoor equipment, where it runs for longer periods of time at slower speeds, it can make your moisture problem worse as well. If your ducts are undersized, if your return air intake is undersized, if your air conditioning is undersized, which you were leading towards that question, feet, that would make your moisture problems worse because of very long run times and high static pressures if your ductwork is undersized. So, yeah, I mean, all of it needs to be looked at and determined what's the causation of the system being that wet. Here's the other part, too. And you said the line set, the copper line, the suction line was wet as between indoor and outdoor equipment. You know, a lot of times when you see that and you have undersized ductwork, meaning some high static pressures or some duct leaks or both, that's an indication or a good high probability that the refrigerant charger is not right. And when your refrigerant charger is not right, then that line set can certainly sweat a lot. I mean, it's insulated, so because it's going to condense, it's going to sweat. But if it's sweating through the insulation, then that's another indication you may have some charge problems, refrigerant charge problems.
Okay. So who is there someone you could recommend who could look at that and determine? I mean, the unit is brand new, the AC unit's brand new, and it has extensive ductwork. Now, it doesn't have flex duct. It has a trunk line that comes off the unit, and then it has these hard metal ducts that come off of these trunk lines. It's very extensive ductwork through the house, so it's not flex duct connected to just the plenum. It actually runs off of this trunk line. And the return on this thing is huge. I mean, I think the return – I mean, it has like three different boxes where the return – goes into the back of the unit. So the major problem is really not the suction line. I mean, it is sweating a little bit, but the major problem was that the condensation line from the evaporator is just, it's excessive moisture coming from there.
Okay. So the person who installed it, he's a licensed, or he or she's a licensed AC dealer, and yep, they've been made aware of all this?
Absolutely. And they pretty much are saying call a roofer and have him install Whirlybirds or a power ventilator.
Okay. Well, I'm not a fan of the power ventilator unless you have to use it. If it's the last resort, okay, but there are other options first. I mean, you can do the wind turbines. You can do the solar power exhaust fans with the solar power. As opposed to an AC powered unit. The reason I like the solar is because they don't move as much air as the traditional AC powered units. Plus, the solar is a DC motor; it lasts a lot longer, okay, as opposed to the AC motor. So,
the last unit that was in there was doing the same thing. He upgraded the unit because it was very old. But it was doing the exact same thing that this one's doing.
Right. Yep. So, which is probably indicative.
I'm kind of wondering, did he have a ventilation problem? Because the last unit did it, this unit's doing it. And so you have two of the same units doing basically the same thing, you know. The other unit was about 20 years old. So he upgraded the unit, changed it out, and now the new unit is basically doing the same thing that the old unit was doing.
Has anyone measured duct leakage? Have you done a duct leakage test in this house yet?
No, I'm writing this down though, because I'm going to tell him that, like, to check the airflow from the ducts, or to check for loss of airflow.
Well, yeah, I'm just looking for duct leaks. If he's having duct leaks and they didn't change the duct system when they just changed the equipment, it may not be attic ventilation. Although attic ventilation may be contributing to it, it also may be a combination of duct leaks and attic ventilation.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to get somebody to do that then. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. You bet. Good luck with that, Robert.
All right, thanks. Thanks a lot. You have a good weekend.
Yes, sir. You do the same. All right, listen, folks, we are going to go to a commercial break. If you have a question, please give me a call. We'd love to talk to you. That number is 260-1870, or send me a text at 87087. We'll get back. We're going to start reading some of your texts. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back to the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the show. You heard the number. It's 504-260-1870, or you can send me a text at 87870. We haven't had a chance to look at any text yet today, so let me do that now. This text is from Darren in Delchays. Darren says, hey, Paul, this is not a question, but an endorsement. I had a 50-year-old house, single-pane windows replaced with twin-pane, energy-efficient glass windows. Savings in energy bills substantial. so saving substantial when he replaced his windows. So glad to hear that, Darren. Hope you enjoy those new windows. All right, here's the next text. It says, is there any recourse for the consumer against contractors? They've been building the garage since November 2018. No work done for 3 weeks. The tie-in of the new garage and the existing roof has caused a couple of leaks that have been active for months. Concerned about mold and insulation damage, any recourse? Wow, I'm so sorry this is happening to you. Yes, so, you know, there's a few things, and I'm not sure where you're located. You don't tell me where you're located. But the first thing I would do is I would go to your local building official in your municipality, whether it's a parish or the city, and I would have a conversation, sit-down conversation with them with some facts. Don't, you know, I think it's best to deal with facts with this, not necessarily emotions, which I know you could, you know, it's hard to separate the two. I think it's better if you have a typewritten letter of facts you can hand it over to that the building official. I would next go and call the Louisiana State Contractors Board, inform them of this as well. And then finally, there's some other action or some recourse you can have, and that would be call your the attorney's office, your district attorney in your parish or your municipality, and talk to them about this. And normally they have a contractor fraud division that they can help you address some of these things. And at least these folks can give you some advice what needs to be done. And then while you're at it, I think I would also contact the Better Business Bureau and have them give you some coaching on what should be done as well. You know, projects sometimes get delayed because of weather, but not building a garage since November of 2018, and of course, certainly no work done for this amount of time, and having the leaks. You know, yes, when you're renovating and adding on, sometimes the weather gets you and you do have some leaks, but not ongoing leaks. You know, those leaks need to be addressed and dried up, and the water damage needs to be mitigated to prevent damage to insulation and wood and indoor air quality and mold and everything else. So, well, I really, really hope you take some action and get some resolution to this. That's a frustrating situation. I'm sorry. All right, let's move on to our next text. Next text says, hey, replace the toilet in the master bathroom. Hall bathroom started to have a sewer odor, but now master bathroom has a musty smell. Didn't caulk under the toilet yet. No water on floor yet. Didn't have smell before replacement. Wow. Okay, so here's the thing. It is possible that your wax ring didn't get a good sale seat when you replace your toilet. And sometimes pressures move things around. So you may be pulling that toilet and replacing the wax wing again. In fact, sometimes it, depending on the floor in the toilet, you can use two wax rings, one on top of the other, and compress them down. And that sometimes solves these sewer odor smells. And that's what I would do first before I took any caulk between the toilet and the base of the toilet. I would pull that toilet again, would replace the wax ring. I would even go as far as putting two wax rings on it, compressing it down, locking up, securing it, and then seeing how what happens to the smell. And I would do both the master bath and the hall bath, and see if your smells go away. Because that's really the only place you can be coming from inside your bathroom, presuming your plumbing stack, your vent stack is not obstructed. So I hope that gives you some guidance. All right, next text. I have an electric central heat. My daughter has gas central heat. Does this mean one has a positive flow and the other one has a negative flow? What exactly does that mean? Okay, let me tell you the difference. So in the air handler, that's your inside unit for your air conditioning and your heat. When you have a gas furnace, the gas furnace is typically under, a portion of it is under positive pressure, meaning you have two components of your duct system, your air distribution system. You have a negative side and a positive side. The negative side is where the air goes into the return air filter and goes through your machine. And once it gets past your blower motor, that fan motor, it changes from a negative pressure to a positive pressure. With a gas furnace, most times your air conditioning portion is under a positive pressure. When you have a electric furnace, that's an air handler or a heat pump, and that evaporator coil portion is under a negative pressure, meaning it's sucking air in at that point, because it depends on what side that evaporator coil is in relation to your fan motor. So upstream, meaning from your return air intake to your motor, is negative, and from your fan motor all the way down to your supply side, all your supply ductwork is under positive pressure. All right, listen, I hope that helps. We got through most of our text. If you have a text, send it to me at 870-870, or also if you have a question, give me a call, 504-260-1870, and good morning.
Hi, Paul. My question in reference to the previous caller, he was talking about the tankless hot water heater. And I want to know, do you need electricity at all to operate the gas tankless water heaters?
Yes, ma'am, you do. But you don't need 220 volts. You need 110 volts. But you do need electricity as an igniter to ignite the system.
Okay, that's what I thought. We lose the electricity, not often, but often enough that, I was wondering if they had changed that or had invented something to bypass that. Okay, well, thank you. You answered my question.
Yes, ma'am. Man, that was an easy one. Thank you for holding on. I appreciate it. Good luck. Thanks for listening. Thank you. Let's go into our next call. Let's speak with Charlie. Hey, Charlie, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I've got a similar problem to your one of your previous callers. I've had two air conditioning units in my house attic replaced. They're about 2 years old. One's a 3-ton and another 2-ton. The previous units were fine. Well, they were worn out and old, but I didn't have any condensation problems that I had with one of my units. The 2-ton, as you know, the evaporator housing has two drains, one that goes into your plumbing and the other one that drips into your drip pan underneath the unit. This thing's putting out so much condensation that the one going into the plumbing doesn't do the job. It's still overflowing into the drip pan, and neither one of those drains are clogged up. And that evaporator housing is sweating like a son of a gun. And I've had the rep out there for American Standard out there twice, and initially they were said the air wasn't escaping the unit quick enough, so they put a bigger air plenum in the unit, and actually in both of them. In fact, the other unit does not sweat. It's only the one for the 3-ton's fine. It's dry on the outside, but a 2-ton is sweating like crazy. And like your other caller, I put a timer with a fan to blow on a thing. And I asked them, can we look inside that evaporator house and see if the insulation is in place? And they did open it up after staring at it for like a half an hour and not coming up with an answer. And he said, yeah, everything's in place inside the evaporator housing. The insulation is there. The splash guard's doing its job. I mean, it cools the house very well, the wing of the house. But they're just telling me that it's a ventilation problem with the attic, and I've never had that problem with the previous units. I've got two power ventilators on the peak of the roof, and then I had a wing on the bedroom. There's a whirlybird. Now, I know you don't like those power ventilators. I was going to ask you if I should just disconnect and let the air flow out naturally and just don't use the motors in there, but I don't know what to do with this moisture problem. I'm worried about mold up there.
So, Charlie, has anyone measured the static pressure of this unit? Because you said they put a larger supply plenum. I'm wondering if they shouldn't have to also adjust the return air intake on this 2-ton system.
No, they didn't make any measurements that I know of. They just replaced what they had in there. In fact, the same company had replaced the two previous units that were in there, and they convinced me to change them up because they had the older Freon in it. So I just let them change them both. But as far as measurement, or doing any kind of J-load test, no, that wasn't done.
Okay, well, I'm not necessarily looking at capacity as much as I'm looking would be causing condensation at this point. So it's possible that you have a static pressure issue, and that's what's allowing the smaller unit to condense as much as it is.
Unit was a multi-speed, a variable speed unit. This is not. This is just a single speed 14 SEER.
Okay.
And I have that radiant barrier that's stapled up to the, you know, the roof underneath, you know, the roof there. And
did you add that recently, or has that always been there?
No, it was always in there. It's been there for all the other units that have been in the house as far as the air conditioning.
Okay. Radiant barriers reduce the heat of your attic, so it certainly does allow cooler surfaces to reach dew points sooner
that are still ventilated to the outside. So, but you had that before. You have it at a 3-ton unit. You only have problems with a 2-ton unit. So back to my statement, I would look at duct leakage, which is something I discussed earlier with Robert. I would also look at undersized duct work, not just the plenums, but the actual duct work itself downstream of the plenum and also the return side. I would return duct leaks. I would look at fan speed, and I also would look at refrigerant charge. Those are items I would investigate further in order to determine what's up with this condensation. And let me also say this, because you asked a very good question about the insulation in that evaporator cabinet. Once the insulation gets wet, it's useless. It needs to be removed, stripped, and replaced. So, but you got to get all the other problems solved first, because if you don't solve the other problems first, then insulation is going to get wet all over again, and you'll be doing the same thing. So you've got to get that the condensation problem underway, under control, then replace the insulation inside that cabinet.
Okay. You got a recommendation on somebody who can figure this out?
Yeah. I mean, if you go to my website, paulshouse.com, and you can search what region you're in and also look under heat and cooling, you'll see the AC companies that I recommend.
Okay. This wouldn't be just a regular AC installation maintenance kind of guy. It's a guy who really knows his stuff about, you know, does it scientifically and does his stuff and, you know, knows what he's talking about, right? But you don't have any one recommendation as far as a name or company.
Yep. Look at that list. The top two would be the ones I would recommend.
Okay. Appreciate your help, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You bet, Charlie. Thank you. Have a good afternoon. All right. Wow. Man, we went through those calls quick. So if you have a question, we actually have some availability for you on the phone right now. No one's actually on hold. That number is 504-260-1870. We're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll come right back answering more of your questions after this. Hey, welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. During the break, I was reading some text, and a few minutes ago, we had a call of Paula, and Ms. Paula was calling about tankless water heaters and if it was needing electricity. And my answer was yes, they do, because that's for the electronic ignition. It needs day and night with electricity. But like I said, I was reading the text, and someone texted in and says, hey, I have a tankless water heater with a Paula light, no electricity required. Wow, I was unaware that tankless water heaters have a standing pilot, and we don't need electricity. And the only tankless water heaters I've ever seen, and I've seen thousands of them, have been with electricity, with an electronic ignition. So, hey, texter, if you don't mind, text me the brand name of water heater you have, and if we can get this on the air in the next few minutes and Paul is still listening, perhaps we can give her the brand name that you have, and she can look that up. And it's, I also like to learn about it, too. And listen, I learn new stuff every day, so I certainly would like to find a tankless water heater that doesn't require electricity. I think that would be pretty cool. All right, so hopefully that will come in the next few minutes. Paula, stand by. We may have some new information for you. Let's go to the next call and speak with Jim. Hey, Jim, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Paul. Listen, I remodeled my shed, and I covered it with Texture 111, and it's treated. I wanted to paint it, but somebody told me that you had to wait a while for the oil to come out or whatever, but I'm not sure, but I'm going to hang up and listen. I just want to know if I can paint it now or do I wait, and then do I have to treat it at all before I paint it? So thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir. You bet. No, thank you for calling. So, Jim, the advice is right. Treated lumber is a great product. However, when you paint it and it's wet, you certainly have some problems with it. So what I would suggest you do is get a moisture meter and measure the moisture content of that treated T111 plywood. And see what it is. It needs to be at least 15% moisture content or less. That's 15% moisture content or less. And it's not just measuring the surface, the outside surface, Jim. You want to measure the entire thickness of that plywood, because it's going to dry from the outside in, meaning the outside surface could dry faster than the middle or the backside. It's the backside of your shed, presuming it's against insulation, which it may or may not be. If it's open on both sides, open on the shed side and also open to the atmosphere, then the two outside, you know, the inside and the outside will dry quicker than the center. So once that T111 becomes a stabilized, uniform 15% moisture content or less, then you can proceed with priming it and painting it with a good quality exterior product. I would suggest you use like a latex product with a primer and also paint. and you should do well with it. And, you know, again, the trick is get it to dry and let it stay dry. And you may find, depending how wet it is, that may be a winter project. It may not dry until we get where the outside air conditions are dry enough for it to dry naturally through and through. And that may be a, you know, December, January project. Don't know, but you can continue monitoring it with the moisture meter. Take your pins from the moisture meter and put it into the thickness of that wood and measure the moisture content. When you come back and measure it a second time, don't use the same holes. You have to use different holes because if you use the same holes, then the inside diameter of the hole will dry out. And when you come back and measure it the second time, you'll get a false reading. So make sure you're probing it in different areas every time you read that the moisture content of that wood before you continue with priming and painting. So hoping that answers your question, Jim. I appreciate that phone call and answer the question. All right, listen, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, Ron, you're on hold. Ron, it looks like you are going to be our last caller of the show. So hang on, Ron. We're coming right back to you, and we'll go from there. So right back on the Home Improvement Show after this. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. We're about to wrap things up. Before we do, let's go speak with Ron on hold. Hey, Ron, good morning.
Good afternoon. Yeah, we did the same thing. Thought it was still morning, but it's afternoon. How are you today?
Man, I'm fantastic. How about you?
Yes, I'm okay. But look, I was calling because I heard you about the previous caller. She wanted to know a brand on the tankless hot water heaters that without no electric. Mine are both. I have two. They're gas operated, and the pilot stays lit. But I cannot recommend this brand. The brand name is Bosch, and she should stay away from Bosch. Had I spoken about this last year, I would have recommended her to get Bosch. But Bosch does not back up their product.
Okay. So, Ryan, let me ask you a question about your particular gas tankless water that has a standing pilot. Where do you set the temperature? You set it at the water heater, or do you have a remote thermostat someplace else?
No, it's a what it is a dial that you set the temperature on the dial. It, okay. You know, the dial, it just set it. It doesn't say 100 or 120. Light, medium, high.
Right. Well, almost like the traditional tanked gas water heaters that have that ABC rating. Yeah, they don't give you a temperature. All right, Ron, man, yeah. I appreciate the phone call, and hopefully Paula heard you loud and clear. You would not recommend that brand, but thank you for the information anyway. I sure appreciate it. All right, folks, listen, that is the end of the Home Improvement Show. We're going to wrap things up, but we will be back next Saturday at 11 o'clock. If you have a question in the meantime, you can go to our website, paulshouse.com. You can send it there, or you can go to our Facebook site and post it there.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.